from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After big wins on Tuesday, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton seem to be pivoting toward the general election and toward taking on each other. Trump said Hillary plays the women's card. Clinton shot back, "Deal me in if the welfare of women is the issue." So where are women voters in 2016? What do they think of Hillary and the significance of the possibility of making history with a woman, this woman, in the White House as president? This hour on Point, Hillary Clinton, history, and the women's vote in 2016. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Women of all ages, we want to hear from you. How do you look at Hillary Clinton and the possibility of the first female president of the United States? At gender, her gender, and this race? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're also streaming this first segment on Facebook Live if you want to check it out. Facebook.com/onpointradio. We have a terrific panel with us to talk about Hillary Clinton and this race today, including Jill Abramson, a former executive editor of the New York Times. But first, let's hear from the candidates. After sweeping five primaries on Tuesday night, here was Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump attacking Hillary Clinton in that victory speech.
The only card she has is the woman's card. She's got nothing else going. And frankly, if Hillary Clinton were a man, I don't think she'd get 5% of the vote. The only thing she's got going is the woman's card. And the beautiful thing is women don't like her.
Clinton won five out of primaries herself and told supporters in Philadelphia, well, if he wants to go that way, she's ready to go.
Mr. Trump accused me of playing the, quote, woman card. Well, if fighting for women's health care and paid family leave and equal pay is playing the woman card, then deal me.
All right, the table is set, but it was set long before Tuesday night. Joining me now in the studio is Jill Abramson, former executive editor, that's the boss, of the New York Times. She writes a column for The Guardian now and is a visiting lecturer at Harvard. She's known Hillary Clinton since the 1970s. Jill Abramson, welcome to On Point. We're so glad to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here.
And from Washington, Alana Goodman joins us, reporter for the Washington Free Beacon, where she's covering Hillary Clinton. Alana, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks, Todd. Thanks.
Great to have you here. And from Los Angeles, Anne Friedman joins us, writer for New York Magazine, focusing on politics, gender, and media. A recent piece from Anne was headlined, "Stop Pitting Women Against Each Other Over Hillary Clinton." Anne Friedman, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have all three of you here. Jill, can we just go first to Trump and Tuesday night, and all she's got is the women's card, and anyway, women don't like her?
Well, both things are clearly false and meant, you know, in from Trump's point of view, to be yet another insult. I mean, what is the woman's card? I mean, women are more than half the population, half the sky.
How special is that?
Right.
I mean, special and it's huge.
So it's hard to argue, you know, that women are part of some identity politics. And I think Gayle Collins in her New York Times column today mm-hmm. had the best line. She said, you know, imagine if Donald Trump was a woman and behaved the way he does and talked the way he does.
So brash, so much
bravado. He would get less than 5% of the vote.
And what have we seen so far in this race? I mean, we're at this funny moment where it is kind of turning from a real primary contest to a lot more attention on the general election. But we've seen a lot already about how women have turned out within the Democratic Party and independents showing up there as well in terms of how they see Hillary and the significance of her as a woman in this race. What have we learned from that, Anne?
I don't know. I think that, you know, much has been made of generational differences between women. There are also some breaks along racial lines. I mean, women are not a monolith. I mean, as pointed out, they are indeed a huge percentage of the population. So it's really hard to generalize. This is how all women feel about Hillary. I think what's interesting, especially comparing to how she talked about herself and positioned herself in the primary in 2008, is now she seems a lot more willing and has been from the start of the race to embrace the fact that her gender might be a selling point, especially among some women, which I think there are younger women and older women, women of all races, who definitely respond to that, you know, even in 2016.
Alana, you're there in Washington watching this. If we cast our mind back to 2008 when Hillary Clinton was in it to win it but didn't, There was Barack Obama, also a history-making candidate, ultimately. Many people obviously voted for Barack Obama, but among them, African Americans turned out in huge numbers to support his candidacy and ultimately his election. Do you see a comparable surge of women voting for Hillary this time to make history, Alana?
I don't. And I mean, if you look at her numbers, she has been underwater with women as well. I mean, she has negatives across the board.
What do you mean by underwater and what do you mean by negatives? She's been winning, and she's been winning in primaries with majorities of women outside New Hampshire.
Well, her unfavorability ratings have been over 50% with them, and they've been over 50% like across the board for a lot of groups.
A good dozen less than Donald Trump's, but still strong.
Yes, yeah, no. Well, Donald Trump's are definitely higher with women. But yeah, so that's something. I just don't see this outpouring. And I mean, as you mentioned earlier, there has been a lot of support from younger women for Bernie Sanders. So, you know, Hillary you know, has a problem there with younger women. And I think that does speak to the generational issues and the divide between older women and younger ones.
Jill Abramson, cast your mind back to 2008. You saw, as we all did, everyone was just palpably aware at almost every step of that election campaign of the significance of this African-American candidate, Barack Obama, mounting this campaign and then heading toward the White House. And there was an enormous turnout in many quarters, but including African-Americans, historically strong turnout there. Do you feel that same sense of history potentially unfolding before us here with Hillary Clinton's campaign? Do you anticipate the same kind of turnout from women in support of Hillary?
Among older women, definitely. Yeah, there is a palpable excitement and sense of wanting to see a woman elected president in their lifetimes. Among younger women, that is less so. I think what we have to remember is she isn't going to be facing Bernie Sanders in the general election. You know, and Sanders has generated a lot of excitement among young people, you know, men and women who don't want an establishment candidate and want change. But, you know, I think they're going to, you know, come round. There are some who possibly won't vote, but I think younger women are going to come around to being excited about Hillary Clinton, in part because they detest Donald Trump.
Ann Freeman, you're in that younger woman terrain.
Barely.
Okay. We'll still grant it to you. We'll grant it to you. How do you read this lack of focus, it seems, among younger voters on the historic significance of this, more on just policy, politics, political revolution? Is that idea of this as, you know, sort of earth-shattering, history-changing, has that somehow been diminished, gone away?
Well, I think that it's hard to separate Hillary's gender from Hillary's history and sort of position as an establishment candidate. I mean, her campaign and indeed, I think the brand of feminism that she stands for or that a lot of women see her standing for is about making progress within an existing and deeply flawed system. And, you know, there are definitely younger women who say, yes, that's the tactic I want to take. There are more of them, or perhaps like the numbers say there are more of them, who want a new system altogether or who want someone who is going to not just propose solutions within this broken mess but like claim to overhaul it a little bit more. There's definitely, I think, some practical reasons for that too. You know, I mean, seeing a woman president in your lifetime doesn't feel quite so pressing when your lifetime is likely to be many decades longer than some of those older women who are voting. So, you know, it's not just purely about how younger women see gender, but I think it's also about their theories for changing the world and, like, what change they want to see brought about and whether they see Hillary as the right person to do it.
You go back to 2008. Here was a little bit from her concession speech, this famous highest, hardest glass ceiling. Here was Hillary Clinton then talking about or suggesting where women's progress had come.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it. And the light is shining through like never before, filling us all with the hope and the sure knowledge that the path will be a little easier next time.
And here was Hillary Clinton, Monday night, MSNBC Town Hall in Philadelphia.
I believe I am a feminist because I believe that women deserve the same rights as men in every aspect of our economy and our society, here at home and around the world.
Ann Friedman, does that not resonate even with millennials who may have had an easier time of it than their older sisters?
I think it does. You know, there was a great article in the New York Times recently by a writer named Jo Filipovich, where she talked to women who said that it wasn't until they really got deeper into their careers and started experiencing sexism in this more personal way that they came around to the necessity of having women in roles like this, or they started to sympathize with Hillary more. I mean, I do think that for some people, having a shared experience of the world and the types of sexism that she's talking about when she talks about those cracks is important to their support for her. And indeed, there are definitely some younger women, many of them. I mean, I think, you know, even though I'm on the older end, again, of those younger women voters, I've experienced a vastly different world than Hillary did when it comes to my lived experiences of sexism. I still experienced it. I still think it would be revolutionary to have a woman as president. But, you know, there is something about the urgency and the way you see that barrier that that personal experience plays a huge role in.
And increasingly, it looks like that candidacy may very well be up against the candidacy of Donald Trump, who's right out there saying all she's got going for her is the women's card, saying she doesn't have the strength, the stamina. There was a time when those were real fighting words, when you were talking with a feminist. Look at Hillary Clinton, think about strength and stamina. There may be things she doesn't have, but it looks to me like she's got those. Listeners, we're talking about Hillary Clinton and the women's vote this hour, how women are looking at the candidacy of potentially the first female president of the United States. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton and the women's vote in 2016, how women are looking at the candidacy of potentially the first female president of the United States. Ann Friedman is with us from New York Magazine, joins us today from Los Angeles. She's been writing a lot about gender and politics in this campaign season. Jill Abramson is with us, former executive editor of the New York Times, writes a column for The Guardian now, visiting lecturer at Harvard. And Alana Goodman is with us, reporter for the Washington Free Beacon, covering Hillary Clinton, a millennial herself. You can join us. How highly do you prize the fact that she's a woman in this race? Is that in itself a powerful factor for you or not? Or is it just a factor, no factor? Are you looking purely at her positions, her policies, her experience? Or are you looking at making some gender history here? Hillary Clinton downplaying her gender in 2008. This season, here's one ad. It's right up front. She used a video from a town hall in Las Vegas in August of a little girl who had asked her if she would be paid the same as a male president.
Do you think when you're president, you'll be paid as much as if it were a male?
This is one of the jobs where they have to pay you the same. But there are so many examples where that doesn't happen. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure every woman in every job gets paid the same as the men who are doing that job.
That was a Clinton ad. This is not Tuesday night, Donald Trump, New York City.
She will not be a good president. She doesn't have the strength. She doesn't have the stamina. I know about dealing with China. I've made billions of dollars dealing with China. China can be dealt with, and you can get along with them. But Hillary does not have the strength or the stamina to deal with China or other things.
Jill Abramson, there was a time when saying that about a candidate with a proven record, I mean, whatever you may say about Hillary Clinton, she's hung in there. Strength and stamina seem kind of indisputable. Maybe not by Donald Trump's standards or the way he defines them, but there was a time when words like that would be real fighting words in sort of gender wars and feminist terms. Are you feeling that kind of bristle among women, and how widely today when Donald Trump lays down something like that?
I just think what he said is plain ridiculous, and I think that's what many men and women think of that statement.
Eye-rolling. We saw Chris Christie's wife on TV essentially rolling her as Mary Pat.
Mary Pat, right. And Christie himself still looking like a captive, an unhappy captive.
But he's still standing up there. But what about women and this candidate?
Think of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. She was constantly up in the air. She traveled more than any top official. She has incredible stamina and incredible perseverance. It just of all the things to focus on, it's ridiculous. I think what Donald Trump is doing is he's trying to go back to the old argument that I think the Clinton campaign feared in 2008, that a woman isn't strong enough to be president. It's absurd. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, I bet, has been doing official business in China, for a longer amount of time and with more energy than Donald Trump.
Ann Friedman, that may not be an attack that sticks, though Trump could stay on it. But what about the high negatives? I mean, Alana pointed them out. They're there for Donald Trump, but they're also there strongly for Hillary Clinton. These would be two of the least popular in terms of favorability ratings of maybe any candidates in history. Let's look at Hillary's. What's that about? And there are a lot of women out there. Why don't women bring that unfavorability rating down for Hillary Clinton?
I don't know. I mean, there's sort of a catch-22 happening with her that I see, which is in order to be a woman who is broadly perceived to be well-qualified for the presidency, you need to accrue more experience than a male candidate. I mean, we see that in terms of her background versus like a Bernie Sanders or a Donald Trump, which means you need to be around longer, which means you kind of need to be more establishment.
I mean, Bernie Sanders has been around a long time as well, I must point out, in Congress and in Senate and as a mayor, longer as an elected official.
But, you know, I mean, many, in terms of, you know, like roles within the executive branch, I mean, the range of experience that she has had and in terms of the media spotlight that has been on her, it's just not comparable to what, you know, Bernie Sanders has experienced. You know, Trump has obviously been in the media spotlight, though not as a politician or as a candidate. I think it's just difficult to be around that long, to be someone who is, you know, a woman with lots of opinions and to not be perceived as negatively. Especially in this election where there is pretty much nothing worse than being establishment. You know, like everyone wants to know how you are going to make change. And so it's this interesting thing. I don't think Trump is totally wrong in saying that, you know, in a weird way, he's saying her gender is an advantage to her. And I do agree with that, I definitely don't agree that it's the only thing she's got going for her. Far from it. But I do think it's one way she indicates to people that she would signal change were she elected.
Alana Goodman, Ted Cruz now has Carly Fiorina, as of yesterday, on his ticket as a vice president in waiting, should he get close to a nomination or get the nomination. And we know, but Trump is doing so much better with delegates so far, racking up a lot more state wins. We know there's a deep, deep undercurrent of misgiving about Donald Trump, the Never Trump movement and all that. What about women in Republican circles? If it is Donald Trump and they're looking at Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, could you see her gender or just the anti-Trump sentiment that's been so manifest inside the GOP as bringing Republican women to Hillary, Alana?
I don't see that. I think that, Donald Trump, what he said about Hillary Clinton going after her, attacking her, that's something that Republican women like to hear, obviously. And, Hillary has more support with women nationwide. Women tend to vote Democrat, so that's a big part of it. But I think within the Republican Party, women are not necessarily going to be turned off by Trump because of his statements about women. I think that the Never Trump camp, these are the sort of people who will dislike Donald Trump for a lot of different things that he says, and they may pick up on certain things that he says about women to criticize him. But, outside of that, the Never Trump camp, I can't see it having too much of an impact for him going after Hillary Clinton.
It was Clinton in her Tuesday night victory speech. 4 out of 5 she won, and she sort of turning toward the general election and slyly maybe attacking, not maybe, I guess, Donald Trump by using his name, but contrasting love and hate. You tell me if it's a gender thing going on here. But here's Clinton.
We're going to imagine a tomorrow where hard work is honored, families are supported, streets are safe and communities are strong, and where love trumps hate.
Jill Abramson, unpack that jab from Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump is bellicose openly in political terms on the stage. Can she come at him from this angle, and does being a woman help her come at him from this angle?
You know, I'm not sure. I have read elsewhere that, you know, this love theme and we're a good country is going to be very much part of her campaign. You know, you used the word bellicose. I think that's interesting because Donald Trump gave his big foreign policy speech mm-hmm. yesterday, and he was not bellicose. He was, you know, saying that, you know, the United States has to put its interests first. And, you know,
in global terms, not. But on the political stage, metaphorically, this
no,
is...
No, I mean, his whole persona is, I agree, bellicose. So you only have to watch a couple of episodes of The Apprentice, which is how most Americans actually know Trump, mm-hmm. to see that he can be bellicose. And he berates people. And I don't think that he is going to have wide appeal in the electorate, but not necessarily on a gender basis. I think that voters have deep reservations about his experience, mm-hmm. his knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know, he has picked up Sanders' criticism of Clinton's judgment, mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there are deep questions about his judgment. And I think those are the most important qualities in a president, not their gender.
And is it possible that we've moved past the history-making point, even without having a woman in the White House, that here we can have two big candidates, one who's pretty, you know, kind of chest-beating male in his presentation, Hillary Clinton, you can judge for yourself how her gender presentation, but are we past gender somehow and already just looking at policy? Is it possible that that's really not an issue?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, in conversations that I have with women, and also, you know, like just talking to people who are in this primary, maybe a little bit uncertain about Clinton. Universally, I hear at least Democratic voters saying they like the idea of putting a woman in the White House for the first time. They just have reservations about, you know, her, you know, whatever they perceive to be her hawkish foreign policy background, or, you know, her family name, for example, and like the appearance of what does that look like to put two Clintons in the White House, or, you know, things that are related to her gender. I mean, obviously, those things come into play with gender as well. But you know, like I see it as sort of a point that's in this like this larger conversation about pros and cons that affect her. And you can't erase it, you know, like in 2008, you know, we saw how well that went. Nor do voters want her to, but it's there. It's there, and it's not like point number one for all voters, but it's there.
Anne, Alana, Jill Abramson, stand by. Lots of callers on this subject. Marcia in Winchester, Massachusetts. Marcia, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was not a Hillary supporter in 2008. I had finished reading Carl Bernstein's book about her, and I had deep reservations about her, basically her judgment, her political judgment. I felt at the time that there was sort of a political judgment chip missing. And then I watched her career as she progressed through the Senate as the senator from New York. I watched her as Secretary of State. I did feel that her 2008 campaign was a mess. But my feeling about her now has not so much to do with her gender, but the fact that she is extremely experienced. But I think one thing that people are missing is the trust issue. And a lot of people I speak with are very angry with her over the server issue. And the quicker that gets wrapped up, the better for her. The other thing is I have a daughter who's 30 years old who is a big Hillary supporter. She has already suffered at her young age some discrimination in the workplace through summer jobs in college. Mm-hmm. She feels that the younger college women are not getting it. They don't see the connection between what the sexual politics on campus and what they're going to face in the workplace. She feels is this sort of a disconnect. The younger generation feels that they can do whatever they want professionally, which is wonderful, but they're not dealing with the fact that when they get out and they start working, there is this undercurrent of sexism and discrimination that they're still going to have to deal with. And the bigger picture to me with having Hillary in the White House or any Democrat in the White House has to do with the Supreme Court and the fact that we may get a Democratic-controlled Senate and perhaps a Democratic-controlled House of Representatives. So I support her now. I want her elected. I view the big picture. I think it's unfortunate that some of the attacks that are coming at her are gender-based. I think she has learned from some of her mistakes, I hope. And I think the attacks on her judgment are foolish. The attacks about Benghazi are foolish. You know, NATO came to the United States and begged us to get involved. This was not a Hillary Obama-based idea. Britain and France and Germany, from what I have read, wanted us to get involved.
Well, I think Hillary was right in there, too. But I take your broad set of points. I mean, gender there, but a lot of other issues on the table as well. And finally, in your case, support. Jill Abramson, you're in the company of a lot of college students these days, young women you've written who come in and you say, you know, kind of blasé about this candidacy you've written and the prospect of a female president itself. Why? How do you read that?
Well, you know, I read that they just want the biggest change candidate they can find. And that's why Hillary Clinton hasn't gotten them fired up to this point. But I think our whole conversation is sort of stilted and tilted towards elite women. I mean, obviously, the young women who I encounter at Harvard are, you know, the elite of the elite. And I think, service workers and blue-collar workers, they like the Hillary Clinton that's going to fight for them, the fighting Hillary Clinton, who is not going to settle for a workplace where women, you know, earned like 72 cents for every dollar that a man earns, and where, you know, they're subject to changing automated schedules at big box corporations where they can't get childcare for their children when they're young mothers. So, you know, there are more of those people than elite college-educated women.
Alana Goodman, what about that issue of a policy and presentation on the stump? Hillary, the fighter for women who need somebody who cares about their issues. When she gets riled up and in fighting mode, Donald Trump comes back and says, well, she's shouting. She doesn't sound womanlike. How do those play, Alana?
Yeah, I think that what we've seen so far during this election is that policy really doesn't make the difference here. I think it's more of a – I think it has been more of a personality election. I think that people want something new. People want to vote for somebody who they like. I mean, if you look at Donald Trump, he really – the ideas that he has, he breaks a lot with, like, traditional – Republican policies. He has supported Democrats in the past. He's been a
Over the place. But his negatives are through the roof, much higher than Hillary's.
True, but he's still leading in the Republican race, and I think that that's, you know.
But when you look at them head
driven.
To head, if she's, you know, out there and fighting firmly on whatever issues it may be, including women's issues, and Trump says stop shouting, which can sound like a put down from I don't know how many decades ago, does that help Hillary or hurt her? Help him or hurt him?
I don't know. She said the same, a similar thing about Bernie Sanders too, right? When Bernie Sanders said that she was, shouting or being loud about something. So, I don't necessarily see like a gender issue there. And also, Trump has gone after, all the Republicans in the race, and they were a lot of them were men, and so I think this is just part of his nature of, you know, using these attacks and going after people and being a little over the top.
Yep. And if Hillary says lump, love Trump's hate, and Trump comes straight at her in his, pretty rugged way, how do you think that plays out?
I think it's a good thing for Hillary.
I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about Hillary Clinton and the women's vote in 2016, how women are looking at the candidacy of potentially the first female president of the United States. Jill Abramson is with us, former executive editor of the New York Times, with me in the studio. Ann Friedman is here from New York Magazine with us from L.A. today. Alana Goodman is here with the Washington Free Beacon. You can join us as well. Women, how do you see Hillary, the candidate? Will women rise up for Hillary the way African Americans rose up for Barack Obama? Should they? There was a fracas over former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright back in February, introduced Hillary Clinton at a rally in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, looking to rally younger women with her now famous or infamous line about a special place in hell.
We can tell our story about how we climb the ladder, and a lot of you younger women don't think you have to. It's been done. It's not done. And you have to help. Hillary Clinton will always be there for you. And just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
Albright later apologized for that comment, but you get the gist of it, and it's maybe generational, maybe more. Linda in Nashville, Tennessee. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to say that I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2008. I didn't vote for her because she was a woman. I voted for her because she had so much more experience than Barack Obama, and I really felt that she was better suited to do the job. So fast forward to this election. I am a longtime Democratic Party voter. I have been totally in support of Bernie Sanders, and I have to say that in one of the earliest debates between Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Sanders, they asked her, why should people vote for her? And she said something to the effect of, because I'd be the first woman president. She totally lost my vote on that answer. And I'm a feminist. I've been in the workforce for over 40 years. I'm in my 60s. I just think that is the marketing.
But Linda, does that mean something to you? Does that mean nothing to you? Does it mean anything at all to you, first female president of the United States?
Well, I think it would be really wonderful. But what I think would be more wonderful is to have the right woman in that position, not have somebody in there because they opportunistically made decisions or statements that drew them in there, or that by default, which I think might be what's going to happen this time, is that we're going to end up with Hillary Clinton as our president, not really because people want her very much, but because she's the lesser of all the other candidates that are considered undesirable.
The lesser evil, I guess. Linda, I appreciate your call. I mean, in some ways, you just can't win here, Jill. Hillary Clinton has said very bluntly in the past, I'm not running because I'm a woman. On the other hand, you know, if you look over a long period of time, there's never been a woman there. It would be a big...
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
And it was a big deal when I became the first female executive editor, managing editor, and Washington bureau chief of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nobody said I got those jobs because I was a woman.
Certainly
but it
not.
Was still... A very big deal in a newsroom that had been male-dominated to see a woman, you know, climb to the heights.
You've been around the track then. Why now, when you've got some younger women saying, not that big a deal to us, why do you think it's still a big deal to see a woman as commander-in-chief, as president in the White House?
Because, you know, it's more than symbolic. It enables, I don't, you know, like... I think she meant as a joke what Madeleine Albright said about the special place in hell. But when you have, you know, when I became executive editor, I consciously tried to promote highly qualified women to senior editing jobs. It was, you know, and all forms of diversity were important to me. And, you know, it does, I think, make you a change agent of sorts, especially on that front. And so it just is a big deal. It's a benchmark of history, and you know, It does send a message
just on
to
the face
rest
of it.
The world.
Alana Goodman, how do you look at that and what it would mean, the symbolism of having a woman in the Oval Office as president?
I think it would be a wonderful thing. I think that, you know, everyone would like to see that. And as the last caller mentioned, I mean, you know, what a lot of people think is it has to be the right woman. And I think that that's how a lot of younger women look at this. They say, you know, it would be great to have this, but it's got to be the right person. And I think that's the key. And with Hillary Clinton, she, you know, as I mentioned before, her unfavorables across the board are high. She has the issue with trust. She has, you know, she's a very weak candidate, a weak front runner for the Democrats. So I think that, you know, that plays into it, too.
I mean, I guess it's all a lot in the eye of the beholder. Those unfavorables are high. But again, it's all relative. Trump with even higher. Then there's the issue of what does it mean to have someone in there who may pay more attention to equity in staffing up all those big positions. Here was Hillary again, MSNBC Town Hall in Philadelphia Monday night, talking about appointing women to the top rank.
I am going to have a cabinet that looks like America, and 50% of America is women.
If she's president. Rachel in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Rachel, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that as a woman, I am tired of the media and of other women telling me that I should vote for someone just because of their gender or their race. I like to think of myself as intelligent enough to decide based on the policies who I'm going to vote for. And I think if we really want equal rights, isn't voting for someone just because of their gender cutting into that? We need to look at policies and who's going to truly affect the country in that way.
So do you not buy the view that just having a woman in the White House, not just a woman, but a woman who has said, as we just heard, I will stand up for gender equity. Is that in Hillary's case not a kind of policy pronouncement in itself?
It is, but there's other policies that one needs to look at, too, as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're just saying, okay, I'm going to vote for a woman regardless of what I think about her on the other issues, then that's being just as discriminatory as voting for someone because they're a man.
I appreciate your call, Rachel. Let me get one more right here. Monette in Shelbyville, Tennessee. Monette, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am an African-American woman, and I would not vote for Hillary. I do not trust her, for one thing. I don't agree with her stance on immigration. I just don't trust her.
Why not, Monette? I mean, overwhelmingly, we've seen African-Americans voting for Hillary in the primaries anyway, but in your case, why not on the trust front?
I guess it's just the way she is. It's like nothing touches her. She doesn't... I don't know. I think women have a sixth sense, and we know we can pick up things in people being women. And there's something about her that's kind of underhanded, that's careless, that she doesn't care, that she does what she has to do. I have another friend that says the same thing, that she just doesn't trust her.
What if it's Trump? What if it's Hillary versus Trump, Monette?
I don't really. I will say I did vote for Donald. I don't say that would have been my first choice. I would rather have the first woman president be Elizabeth Warren. I don't know. But I will not be voting for her, ever.
Monette, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Ann Friedman, here again in these calls, there's this tone of post-gender politics, ironically, as we have a woman closer than maybe ever in history to potentially being president.
I don't know. I don't hear it as post-gender so much as maybe the, you know, gender as a factor that's being weighed is, like, you know, not near the top considerations for why someone might cast a vote. I mean, I do think that there's something in there that saying, I mean, it's difficult to say. I care about electing a woman president. That's something that I would like to see. But, you know, I mean, also I am not, you know, over the moon about, like, a potential Ted Cruz ticket with Carly Fiorina on it. That doesn't entice me to vote.
Just because she's there.
Just
yep.
as much. Exactly. And, you know, that's totally, I think that is something that, honestly, Hillary has acknowledged. I mean, if you ask her to lay out a case for why to vote for her, I don't think she says, well, I'll be the first woman president long pause than some policy points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that, you know, she does have a view of what she would do as president beyond that. And I think it's totally fair to evaluate her policy positions before her gender. That's what I would want of any voter, woman, man, whatever. So I hear what these women are saying. I mean, it's also interesting, right, that this is so often a narrative about Hillary that's placed in generational terms, where we hear younger women don't care about electing the first woman president. And a lot of these callers, you know, at least to my ears, and some of them by their own statements, are not, you know, women in their 20s or early 30s. You know, this is something that all women voters are thinking about. They care about policy in addition to, and in some ways separately from, her gender.
Let me go to Moore, Oklahoma, and Kaylee. Kaylee, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was calling in because I see what I perceive to be as this older generation of women kind of expecting the younger generation of women to elect this female president because we owe it to them for all the hard work that they did paving the way. While I find electing a female president incredibly important, I also have other things to think about being a young mother with two children that really concern me, like our environment, what's going on with our involvement in other parts of the world. And when I look at Hillary's record compared to someone like Bernie Sanders, it's not what I want for a president. It has nothing to do with her gender or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
What really concerns me is that people keep touting that she's so experienced. And yes, there's no denying that she's so experienced, but that worries me because despite the experience, we continue to see flip-flopping from her and really poor decision-making. And I just don't know that I can trust her as a president. She may do wonderful things for women, but she hasn't said anything about her policy on women's issues that's different from Bernie Sanders. So that's where I stand and why I just would not feel comfortable voting for her.
Kaylee, if Bernie doesn't pull it out, and it's looking pretty tough right now, and it comes down to Hillary versus Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, then what do you do? And will gender be part of that or not?
I will not include gender as part of my decision. And I've gone back and forth on this with my husband because we want to raise our children to know that our vote is powerful and that candidates have to earn our vote. So I don't know that I can wholeheartedly then turn around and give my vote to someone that I don't trust or believe in. I may honestly have to leave the presidential ballot blank and just focus on my local elections here, because as you probably know, Oklahoma's got plenty of issues of its own.
Yeah, you got plenty going on. Kaylee, I appreciate your call. Jill Abramson, is it bitter in 2016 to hear, you know, a young voter saying, you've got older women who seem to be saying to me, the younger voter woman, you owe it to us to vote for Hillary Clinton. Does it feel like that's success because you've got a generation of women who now think we can just look at the policy and gender be, you know, ignored? Or does it feel like, hey, wait a minute, there was a lot done. There was a big struggle here. We did do a lot to open up the world for you, younger woman.
I don't think anyone is mounting a very big argument that it's somehow owed, that younger women owe older women and owe Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. their vote. I think what is really interesting about the last two calls is that they both use the word trust. They mm-hmm. don't trust Hillary Clinton. And I wrote a column in The Guardian mm-hmm. saying that Hillary Clinton, actually, when you examine her record, her statements about the issues, the truthfulness of them, and other factors, that she is, you know, no one has an example of her, you know, taking an official action that was influenced by money, either campaign donations or the speeches she's given, which is a pretty good yardstick for dishonesty in politics or lack of trustworthiness. But I think
so. Because, why does it stick?
Well,
why is it out there?
What I tried to explain, and I'm not saying this is a definitive explanation, is that she isn't transparent enough. Like, why not release those speeches? Mm-hmm. Surely they may, you
know,
have a couple.
How bad could they be?
Exactly.
I mean, they're semi-public when they're given.
Exactly. So why not just release them?
Is it related to defensiveness
as a
woman who's taken some blows over time?
Well, certainly she's been scrutinized more than any politician I can think of. Mm-hmm. And there is a gender double standard involved in that level of scrutiny about every facet of her personality, voice, clothing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's the explanation. I think, you know, she is a lawyer. She has been trained to not disclose unless you have to disclose.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's made a number of mistakes in not being transparent. Voters insist on that in this age when everything is basically public.
And it's kind of amazing. I mean, here we are now just a handful of months before the election, a woman who could be president, and maybe gender is just not going to be permitted to play that big a role. But if Donald Trump comes out, you know, two-fisted Donald, really, really banging on her, do you think it might come up yet as a major factor, Anne?
I don't know about a major factor. I think it will certainly remain a factor. It remains a way for her to set herself apart from him. And you know, I think that everything that Jill says about, you know, the way that she's, the choices that she's made, you know, some of that stuff tends to play an even bigger role. It's impossible to separate, you know, whether people perceive her as, you know, shiftier or less trustworthy, you know, because she's a woman, even though they wouldn't acknowledge that that is a factor that informs their thinking. I mean, we all have some unconscious bias when it comes to gender.
Yep.
But, you know, but I don't know that, you know, as a number one issue for most voters, I don't think they would articulate gender as like a, you know, top three reason to vote for someone. It's there, it informs how we
perceive. Kind of amazing in 2016 after all that's been, but here we are. Anne Freedman, Alana Goodman, Jill Abramson, my great thanks to all of you for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.